Christmas Musings with Fairbairn and Russell. Hello and welcome to the Market Musings podcast. And as we nearly approach the end of the year, this is probably our last Market Musings podcast recording of 2020. We're certainly over 90 podcasts, Kenny. We've done pretty well. I don't think we'll quite get the 100 mark this year, but maybe that's something to aim for next year. But our guest today is a regular guest who comes on. It's, of course, Malcolm Palais, who is our resident crypto and Bitcoin expert. And as we look at Bitcoin hitting new highs, Malcolm is here to discuss everything crypto. So how are you, Malcolm? Welcome.
Yeah, hi. Hi, Mark. How are you doing?
I'm good. And Kenny?
Kenny, are you there?
Yeah. Up in Scotland. We're still in COVID region 2, due to get into 4. Unboxing day. So what about you guys, Malcolm? What's happening over in Gibraltar? Is that a similar situation?
Yeah, Gibraltar, the kind of blockchain and crypto capital of Europe, went into effective lockdown yesterday or today. We saw the numbers going up. It's a very small place. There's only 31,000 people actually resident here. So if I was to say to you that the cases went up from 50 to over 200, now if the cases quadrupled in the UK, everyone would be tearing their hair out. Not that they're not doing that now anyway, with all the stuff going on. So, yeah, there was a very short, sharp circuit breaker kind of thing. The restaurants are closing apart from takeaways, all the usual stuff. But it's not the best environment, to go into 2021 globally, really. But everyone's got their own problems, and sometimes these kind of things are take a little bit of the shine off of things that are doing really well, which is our business and the pretty much the cryptocurrency sector. But it is what it is, I suppose.
Well, on the cryptocurrency, then, I mean, gold's had a fantastic year, but also Bitcoin's hitting new highs, is it?
Yeah. A lot of people call me when Bitcoin goes crazy because they remember me for some reason then. Mm. And with everything regarding cryptocurrencies, it's always a bit of a roller coaster. If you think about the in March when we had the market crash, Bitcoin went down to probably, I think, under 4,000. Can't quite recall where it was. And now to see it trading as we speak at over 23,000, that's delivered a phenomenal return for a lot of people.
So March it was under 4,000, and now it's over 25. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. It was. The 52-week low was 3,596, mm-hmm. and the 52-week high is 24,300. So, yes, it's been spectacular. Now, I don't know if anyone I won't say admit to, but you'd want to believe anyone who says they bought at the bottom and sold at the top. Mm. Because, firstly, I don't think the bottom was a place where very few people would be prepared to dare to venture in, because it fell like a knife when everything else fell out. And the people I speak to say that, that was the market just collapsed. And it was kind of shock and fallout from the stock market and everything else that's connected. But people I speak to say that it could have gone a lot lower. It was just that, there was nothing stopping it. There was so many sellers around. And now the brave people who came in at that level, and I wasn't one of them, I must tell you, I didn't sell what I was holding, but I didn't feel brave enough to go in and buy some more at that, at 3,600 or whatever. Doing well. It did recover quite sharply. The thing that you have to sort of remember with Bitcoin particularly, and the large cryptocurrencies to a lesser extent, is what's the fundamental makeup of them and what drives them. It's a very kind of counterintuitive concept if you don't understand it, but in some respects it's very simple. It has got the potential. If you want me to stick my neck out and say what I think it's going to be what it's going to go to. I don't know whether, is it too early in the podcast to do that? Should we save that to the end?
So
we
keep, get it out.
You're not worried that everyone will switch off once they hear it? Well, okay. Well, then I can have to explain why, because maybe, but I believe, and I'm not the only person who said this, that by the end of 2021, it could reach $100,000.
$100,000 by end of 2021.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. The reason it crashed, obviously, there was a general fear, wasn't there, at the time, but also I guess a rush to liquidity because the US dollar, obviously, you know, people went to the US dollar, but then we saw the stock market recover quite, you know, relatively quickly, Bitcoin as well. Yeah. But I mean, those kind of swings, Malcolm. I mean, I'm used to trading in AIM shares. Well, not trading, but investing in AIM shares, right? And Bitcoin has far bigger swings, it seems to me, than most of the AIM companies. I mean, is that something to be? That it's good, but it's also bad, isn't it? Because it's not stable, like, you know, like, I don't know, like the pound or the dollar, is it?
You can say a lot of things about. You can call Bitcoin a lot of things, but stable isn't one of them.
Yeah. But isn't that the fear I think a lot of people have about it as well?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, but it's also don't forget, volatility is what every trader wants. Mm-hmm. So the early people into this space were actual traders. They were market traders who found that they could be much more creative in their strategies by trading cryptocurrencies than they could with any kind of traditional instrument or established instrument on a recognized market. And, you know, the crypto markets trade 24/7. They're completely automated. There's all sorts of players on there, different kind of levels and skills and experiences, and it's a genuine market that is growing and expanding. I think if you say that the is it good or is it bad, it is what it is. You have to decide whether you want to get involved in that. The thing that gives me, I'm not a trader. I mean, in fact, it's something I think I always would have liked to have done, but I'm still sort of drawn towards the fundamentals of an investment. So it's very hard to be a trader when you're sitting with something that you believe in the long term. I often show people my position I took in Apple in 1999, I sold it after 4 years, and you know, I made a 4 or 5 times return, which was phenomenal. But if I would have held on to it to today, I would have seen, if I get my calculator out just very quickly, well, I mean, I can tell you it would have been, I think I put about $7,000 in at the time, and it would be over almost $1.5 million today. So, you know, that's a different story, I know, but it's still sort of an example of the difference between a trader. A trader just trades and then just moves on to the next trade. What happens with crypto, particularly Bitcoin, is there's no market makers, you see. So you're not playing against anyone that is actually sort of fixing or trying to move the price in one direction or another. There are large participants in there who use their own strategies to try and, you know, scare the market. These are guys called whales, as in not the place, but the large sea creatures, sea mammals. They are sort of considered a whale if you've got more than 20 million in Bitcoin. And then, you know, these guys are sort of trying to make money in the market by effectively picking the periods of time when they can, you know, influence the price, and you know, buy and sell, whatever. This is something that's going on, sort of has been going on for some time. But as Bitcoin has grown, it actually, this year aside, it's got a little less. It's getting less and less volatile as we go along, because the more the entrants, the more people that come into the market, it sort of removes it creates more liquidity. Mm-hmm. So you've got different players who are prepared to buy at different prices. Mm-hmm. But The other thing which is the fundamental with it is that everyone knows that there is a finite supply of Bitcoin and it's quantifiable. So, you know, it's not like, say, with gold, you can, you don't, you know, there could be another discovery or you can get more gold into the market, but it's still quite, you know, tightly controlled in the sense that, you know, it's not easy to find, to make another discovery. And when you do, that's the advantages is to the guys who make the discovery, not necessarily to the Bitcoin, to the gold price. But we've got with Bitcoin, you know, it's there's only going to be a certain amount that's ever going to be out there. So that's why people are kind of, I won't say they're comfortable trading, but they know with a fair degree of certainty that provided the appetite from more and more people coming into the market is sustained, then that supply is going to dry up and it's going to work on pure supply-demand fundamentals and the price is going to move. So this is what I think we're at a stage where it's been de-risked to a great degree. I'm not saying it's not risky, but it's a lot less riskier now than it was, even 2 or 3 years ago.
But it's still then very much an investment thing, though, isn't it? I guess in that sense, you know, it's like buying a bit of gold or buying something to invest in it. There's talk I see that of Bitcoin becoming, you know, almost used in everyday life, like a normal currency. I mean, but can that happen? Is that possible? I mean, I get, maybe as you say, if more people come in and it gets more stable, then maybe it would. I don't know.
Well, when you say used in everyday life, are you talking about for transactions or?
Yeah, exactly. As you would spend a pound or a dollar or whatever in a shop, you know, you can pay. I know you can pay in Bitcoin digitally. You know, it does change it, but it's not the norm, is it? And I wonder will it become the norm? Is that your opinion?
No, I don't think Bitcoin will. I think it's going to get easier to use, but you see, because it's limited in its the speed of the transactions, and it does take a lot longer to actually make a payment and have that payment confirmed than some of the other blockchains, which were built after Bitcoin, which kind of acknowledged that was going to be a drawback for it. So, you know, Ethereum's faster, and some of the other blockchains have actually been built with the speed of transaction in mind. And Ripple is one of those. It's actually designed for transactions. So in the same way, I suppose, with gold, you know, when gold was money, and I'm not talking about being backing paper money, but when, you know, back in Roman times, when, you know, you'd use gold coins and silver coins, then, you know, it wasn't sort of an issue as far as speed of transaction, because you're paying with physical money, physical things. But to a great extent, Bitcoin's purpose, or its kind of its main function, is going to be, I believe, store of value. There will be sort of layers on top of Bitcoin, which, like the Lightning Network and Lumino, but these will kind of help batch payments together and make them transact faster. But ultimately, you know, it's not the, I don't think that will be the main sort of killer app, shall we say, for Bitcoin. I think its key attribute is definitely as a store of value, and that I can see probably, if anything, getting stronger and stronger as we see more institutional investors coming in for that very reason.
Yep. I had to laugh, Malcolm, when you were talking about whales. I mean, I have been referred to a whale several times myself, but it's more of the beach variety. So it is.
Okay. Yeah. Well, get yourself 20 million in Bitcoin, and then you can be referred to in both categories if that's what you want.
Yeah. I mean, I must admit, I have since sold my XRP and my Bitcoin since the first. Yeah, well, I think my XRP, I doubled it So I just took it off the table, and the Bitcoin that I can't honestly remember. It was above 10,000 anyway, but I didn't have that much, to be honest. But still made profit, and I've threw it into some shares, and they've done it well. So I can't grumble. But Ripple, I've still got that in my monitor, and it's ridiculous, the volatility. You know, it's. Yeah. Definitely, I think, now a fear of missing out, not just from individuals, but institutions, because I've noticed quite a few institutions getting heavily involved in Bitcoin recently as well.
That's right. Yeah, there's a company called, the biggest kind of advocate that we've seen this year. Well, we've seen a few, and we mentioned Coincilium. We put out an announcement on yesterday about our crypto treasury, and we quoted John Tudor Jones Paul Tudor Jones also Michael Saylor, and these are two. Well, Michael Saylor is the CEO of MicroStrategies, which he's been a huge advocate of. It's Paul Tudor Jones. I don't know why I've got that name wrong. But he's a ex fund manager and philanthropist, and they've been tremendous advocates. And this has sort of helped get the mainstream more involved and engaged, because when these guys start talking about Bitcoin and then buying it, it kind of demystifies it, and it gives a lot of other people confidence. But with MicroStrategies was a really interesting one, because his view was that, they had, I think, $650 million in their treasury, and they felt that they're not earning anything for it. No one's earning anything for their cash at the moment. And he felt that Bitcoin was the best investment that he could make. Or I say investment, way to diversify his treasury and protect it. And he's done incredibly well out of doing that. They issued a convertible note for another 650, and they put that million, and they put that into Bitcoin, and it's now standing at 1.6 billion. So their share price has gone up phenomenally because of it. So, it's kind of a virtuous circle at the moment. I mean, I can understand why people on the outside of the industry, or people who aren't that involved, see it as a bubble. I completely understand that, because it doesn't behave like anything anyone's ever seen before. And we also kind of very used to that cynical kind of things that when anyone says this time it's different, everyone rolls their eyes, don't they? Because it's never different. But I can only say that this has been going, Bitcoin's been going for since 2009. It's only been continuing to go up. I mean, it's had one down year, I think, in that period of time, and its adoption is growing. It's going mainstream. In the early days, when it was compared to tulip mania, well, the tulip bubble only lasted 2 or 3 years at most, and even most of that was sort of very, very low awareness of it. And that was not in a time where there was social media and all the other ways of proliferating news. So, but it's quite clear it's a technological innovation, and it allows something that could never have been done before, which was the ability to decentralize transactions and the function of transactions without any requirement for a central custodian. And that's the difference. And this is why, it's disintermediating a lot of industries. It has the potential to as a technology, but in terms of acting as money, that's something that is being demonstrated time and time again. And the encryption means it can't get hacked. So that security is sort of inbuilt in it. You do see, you do hear about exchanges getting hacked, but that would be similar to, a gold in a vault, and the vault gets broken into. You can't stop that, but the actual integrity of the Bitcoin itself is the same as the gold itself. You can't destroy the gold, but you can people can and do use sophisticated methods to actually hack exchanges. And I think that's something that is going to be an ongoing thing. That's something that security is going to be very important.
Yeah, yeah. And obviously, I mean, Bitcoin's phenomenal rise is dragged along the whole crypto sector. I mean, just a bit.
Yeah.
Every coin I've looked at is, you know, it's at least double, if not treble, this year.
Yeah. Yeah, I think a lot of them have. I mean, there are some that sort of, you know, real sort of failed projects where there's no real interest in them. But certainly the larger ones have. And the other thing is, of course, when a lot of these projects did their token sales, as in when they got going to create their coin, they sold their tokens for Bitcoin or Ethereum. So they've got huge treasury positions as well, which allow them to kind of spend money on developing their own projects and blockchains, and the more the crypto goes up, the more treasury they have. So you know, that's key to actually part of this dynamism you're seeing. And I think, you know, the other driver which we haven't touched on is the COVID crisis, the economic crisis which has been brought about by COVID, and which is exacerbated because we were always in that situation where there was money being printed because of unsustainable economies around the world. But this has just kind of exaggerated it, really. And that's probably one of the main drivers in terms of the timing. Plus, of course, there was the Bitcoin halving, which came in May. And that meant there was only half as many Bitcoin available in the system. So that sort of is another supply constraint. So it's all, I suppose, yeah, the term probably is best is a perfect storm, really.
Yeah, yeah, a virtuous circle. I like to use that word. So yeah. I mean, there's obviously, out with Bitcoin and Ripple and Ethereum, I mean, there's obviously a few others. Is there any particular token stroke coins that you're pretty keen on, Malcolm?
Anyone who's sort of interested in getting in at this stage, I would sort of caution people to stick with, if it's purely for capital gain, stick with Ethereum and Bitcoin. Ripple is kind of one of those that has actually got a few challenges at the moment, because I think there was some notification that they were being sued by the SEC. There's a legal action within the SEC about their initial sale, which I haven't actually check too far into, but it is something that needs to be clarified. So that might be a little bit, people might be a bit wary there. I think Polkadot's very good. That's a very good challenger for Ethereum. Mm. It's doing pretty much everything that Ethereum is supposed to be doing and taking a lot longer to do. So it's one to watch out for. And there are other projects that are really good, Icon and Phantom. We advised both of those projects at one time. And, you know, they're underperforming, I think, they're all underperforming in relation to Bitcoin and Ethereum at the moment. And that's because the mainstream, all mainstream eyes are on those two. That's where everything's going. So you probably get a point where what we call alt season, which is the alt coins start moving up once the Bitcoin and Ethereum and the big ones start becoming toppy, should we say.
Yeah. Is there still new tokens and coins coming to market, Malcolm, or has it sort of dried up?
No, it's not dried up, but they're changed. The whole thing's changed. They're mostly sort of open finance, decentralized finance projects, which are sort of a twist on the original kind of ideas of token sales. And these are sort of, to a great degree, experiments, and this is moving at such a fast pace. It's one of the areas that Coincilium we've got sort of projects we're working on and we are looking to deploy, but you've got to make sure you get it right when you go into these things. But it's not, you know, I know a project that has launched, which is sort of putting several cryptos together in a bundle, and they're looking to sort of offer like a basket, more like it's like an ETF, And that did a little token sale, not huge, you know, less than 100,000, and they got it away. So, you know, and that's working. There's a quite a few others that probably go on beneath the radar. So there's not the huge token sales, which were, you know, 20, 40 million. Those aren't happening anything like, I haven't seen one for a long time, but there are smaller ones going on that, again, rely on decentralized exchanges, which are like Uniswap, which have sort of morphed in the market into towards things that are more in decentralized finance. So it's very different to how it was.
Yeah.
And that's in 2018. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think we'll ever get to the stage where we'll have a mining company name and they won't issue shares, they'll issue tokens or coins? I think it would be a marriage. It might be a marriage made in heaven. It might be a marriage made in hell. I don't know. It's an interesting concept.
Well, we looked at this. This was my first obvious, because, you know, with Coincilium a few years ago, we wanted to do something with exactly that, where you create something where the mine can forward sell its gold in the ground and do a token sale to represent that gold. It did have a lot of regulatory challenges, which have still not been resolved. So, you know, that project's on ice at the moment until we can get clarity on the regulation. I thought we'd have had it now. But ultimately, you know, if you're selling your gold in a token form or something that represents your gold, it is an equity in some, or security, should I say, because for whatever reason, you might try and structure it as a debt. It's not always easy to actually get that done. And then you've got to find a market that is going to be able to trust it as a very new instrument. So I think there's definitely a short answer, probably the long answer now, to your question is that I think there's something there, but I think that the likely, I don't think you're going to get away from people needing or wanting to invest in the equity of an entity, a company. And maybe it will be something that sort of gets a little bit smart with tokenizing the equity. So it makes the whole fundraising and the whole trading capability much more sophisticated and easier to do, makes dividend payments easier. So there's a lot of advantages, and I know stock exchanges are looking at this technology very, very closely, but you are coming up against kind of regulation. Whilst, you know, as an academic exercise, I do like the idea of these big projects and these ideas, but I'd much prefer to actually do something that's going to sort of deliver us some early revenues, which we hopefully with Coincilium, we expect to do with our recently announced non-fungible token project, which we announced last week, where we're going to be creating a digital asset that is effectively linked to a Gibraltar postage stamp, which is kind of a bit left field, but it is the collectible market is really interesting.
So it's a digital token linked to a physical
yes
thing.
Yes. Yeah. But this is a whole different area of blockchain, which is kind of probably not going to take too much of the time because it's maybe something for a different a subject for another time. But non-fungible tokens are using the technology of blockchain, and particularly they were developed on the Ethereum blockchain, whereas one Ether and another Ether are exactly the same. You know, you can have 50 Ether. They're fungible. So one can be exchanged for another. But there's another standard on Ethereum where you can create tokens that are unique. They have unique characteristics. And you can then effectively create or set to create a limited number of those tokens. And there will always only be that limited number. And they might have, each one has different characteristics. So they can have built-in scarcity. And that's what is effectively the market for non-fungible tokens has started to develop and grow. And one of the areas that is seeing the fastest growth is with collectibles. So at the moment we're looking at stamps, because stamps, with, you know, by their very nature, although they can be used for postage, are collected by people who appreciate their value and their scarcity. And this whole market with digital marketplaces is doing the same thing. So it's just, it is another use for blockchain, but it also is another angle for crypto, because there's value there. If I was to tell you the first time when Ethereum first was launched, and these token sales were happening on Ethereum, there was also a new game that was created called CryptoKitties. I don't know if you ever heard of that.
No.
That name. Well, no. I'd urge anyone to check that out, because these CryptoKitties were selling. They're all unique, and you play a game and you collect them. Don't know exactly how they worked, but ultimately, because I wasn't playing them, but it was amazing to see that, you know, you'd buy two CryptoKitties, and then they would produce another unique one, which could be very rare. And then it's a little bit, I think, like Tamagotchis, if you remember that kind of thing. It was sort of an interactive game. But then they started trading them on the exchange. And if you check on Google, but some of these extremely rare CryptoKitties were selling for over $100,000.
It's crazy.
Isn't it? But then again, is it crazy when you see someone who pay, I don't know how many, the same kind of money, maybe more for trainers, you know, a certain brand, a certain, you know, this is what with a collector is, a specific kind of, you know, it's got a specific appetite, and they've got a specific requirement, and they will understand the value. You do it. And this new generation has got the same kind of thing happening. So, So that's another area to look out for. I think it's going to be a big trend in 2021, particularly a crypto trend. And it's an area that, you know, we're sort of tipping, and we're looking at as well as a company. But I think that generally speaking, crypto is going to move in lots of different directions next year.
Okay.
And that's, yeah.
That's great. So there we have it. Bitcoin at 100,000 end of 2021. Heard it here first.
Yeah.
and Coincilium.
You can come back to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say, you can come back to me if, I mean, well, let's have this conversation this time next year.
Okay.
I'll put my hands up if I'm wrong. and I don't expect anything from you guys if I'm right.
Okay.
Well, here's a good question. We'll put you in the spot, Malcolm. Yeah. So you've got £100,000. I think I've done this with a few guests. Would you buy Bitcoin, gold, or silver?
Right now?
Right now.
Oh, that's, you, I'm going to make some enemies, of friends, if I, depending on what I say here. That's put me right on the spot. Right now, I tell you what, in fact, I would do exactly what I've done. Can I include mining stocks in that as well, or not? Or is it just gold, silver, or Bitcoin?
Gold, silver, and Bitcoin.
Okay. I would put, I think, 60% into Bitcoin.
He's gone for the political answer, so he is.
No, a lot of this is down to my risk appetite. I've got a ridiculously high risk appetite for anyone who's half sensible. So I'd put 60% into Bitcoin, 25% into silver, and 15% into gold.
Okay.
Does that add up?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Don't need the blockchain to work that out.
Yeah. So, but 50% is my absolute safety net. I think that's the safest long term. It's not going to be volatile. It was gold. I think silver is potentially. I think silver could surprise next year. I think it could amaze, because it's got the same kind of characteristics in terms of its scarcity. It's a monetary metal of to a degree. But it's also got tremendous utility in an area, particularly technology and automation, electric vehicles, all sorts of areas where demand's going to be, and solar powers, solar panels, and with clean energy, it's going to be insatiable. I think that silver could be a real, you know, come in from left field and really perform now. I think it's about, $25, $26.
Yeah.
I won't put a prediction there, but I think it could double. I think it could double over next year.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a pretty loaded question for me. So it was, I mean, obviously I'm putting 100% in silver because I love this stuff. Although I did get some gold coins today, and so did Mark. So we are
really
well. This is good. Yeah, today I hold in my hand my very first gold sovereign. Yeah.
Oh, fantastic! Oh, very good. Yeah, you see, you can't touch Bitcoin. That's the other thing.
Yeah.
And the actually, what I would say as a caveat to that, if Bitcoin did go very fast, up very fast, and sort of in a short space of if it went up high in a short space of time, I would definitely cash some out and put it into gold or possibly silver as well, depending on where they are.
No, it was good to have you on, Malcolm, and hopefully
thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Get you on.
This is such a fast moving space, and I'm very keen as well to sort of, you know, impart the knowledge I've built up over the last effectively 6.5 years now, almost 7 years that I've been in this space, and I think it's something that is going to impact everyone's lives, whether they like it or not. And I know a lot of people who were sort of late to the game with computers and didn't want to get a computer and didn't want to get onto the internet. And they have to end up playing this very sort of climbing the steep learning curve. So, you know, from my perspective, this isn't going away. This is going to be part of life going forward. Everything to do with the technology and the currencies. We're going to start seeing central banks issuing digital currencies, as in the Bank of England will have at some point a digital currency, and then you'll need to have a wallet to use it. And, you know, it is important to understand how this technology works and what it's all about.
I think it is. And the ECB as well are doing it as well. Isn't there a consultation out at the moment?
Yes. It'll take a year or so, a few years. China's already started, so it's all going to move. But I think it's very important that people do sort of look at this space, and, you know, it's not going away. It's Bitcoin isn't what it used to be. It's not sort of what was, you know, effectively tainted, you know, with the early adopters, which happens in a lot of technology. It's now maturing. It's becoming regulated. One of the reasons we're in Gibraltar is because of the regulation here around cryptocurrencies and blockchain and token sales. So, you know, you get this under a regulatory framework, and then you provide protection to consumers. So, you know, it's all part of the big journey. Very exciting time to be here.
Indeed.
In this industry.
And as you say, it's not going away. It's constantly changing. No. And we need to be talking again, I think, Malcolm, on what Coin are doing, particularly in the new and emerging spaces of non-fungible tokens, which would be a very new term for a lot of people that requires some digesting.
Yeah, very happy to talk to you about that at the, you know, under the right format. Yeah. I think the key is that Coinsilium is relaunching with a new website and a new strategy, which is going to be particularly in this space and open finance as well. So that's all happening early part of next year. So we will definitely be able to catch up, and I'll be able to give you a little bit more info. It's been a lot of work this year to get this in place, and it's been made even harder because of the COVID situation, which has just delayed so many things we were trying to do. But thank goodness we managed to get there, and, you know, like you guys, looking forward to a beginning of the end to this, and then hopefully the start of a new beginning, so that we can get back to some semblance of normality.
Yes, well, we hope so. And on that note, Malcolm, I wish you very happy Christmas. Thank you very much for your time coming on the podcast with the Market Musings, me and Kenny, out this year, and plenty more next year. So a happy new year to you. And let's hope it's a good one.
Okay. And to you, Mark and Kenny. Have a scotch on me.
Cheers, Malcolm.
Okay. Cheers.
I'll do it.
Bye.
Cheers.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to another podcast from Market Musings with Fairbairn and Russell. Tune in next time.